Yeah, you got to roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. Hey, Merry Christmas, everybody. This is our Christmas show. Merry Christmas, everybody. We're broadcasting tonight, Saturday, December 25th, from WSBC 1240 on your AM dial. We're brought to you by Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Carey, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness. What a great week it's been, and I want to thank everybody who came out to our fundraiser Saturday night. Holy cow, what a great time we had. I'm going to give a list of everybody who kicked in money, so if you didn't, your name will not be mentioned. But what a great crowd. We had a lot of fun, and we're going to have fun right now because we have an old friend here tonight, Jim Lynch, 25 years with the Kill County State's Attorney's Office, but also a celebrated playwright, filmmaker, and he's been on my other show, the Skinny and Hooli show, a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Good friend of ours, and so glad to have you back, Jimmy.
Thanks, Mike.
Merry Christmas to you, pal.
Merry Christmas.
One of the things we do with this show is, since 2019, the Hibernian Radio format started, and it's dedicated to Irish first responders, because we believe that our firefighters, paramedics, and cops, and nurses are the modern-day equivalent of our ancient mythological Irish warriors. And so, and they have great stories. And to a certain extent, you're involved in law enforcement and everything, so you fit the bill. Plus, I just saw your movie, and it's terrific and everything. So let's back up a little bit. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up at Jefferson Park.
Okay, what parish are you from?
St. Robert Bellarmine.
Yeah. And where'd you go to high school?
St. Pat's.
St. Pat's, of course. Yeah. He's a Northside guy.
For the proper marking of where I grew up, it's like a half a block from the Sixpenny Bit.
Yeah.
We all worked there at some point, my family, in some capacity.
Well, I know Maeve Burke works there now, an old friend of mine. She's from Galway, and we just spent some time with her sister, Deirdre, in Galway in October. All right, so you know the whole Northside bit.
Yeah.
You went to St. Pat's. You were a Shamrock.
Yeah.
And then what'd you do?
Then I went to Lyell University on a scholarship for water polo.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all right. They dropped the program pretty
soon. I'm sure your parents were happy about that.
Yeah, we had, because my sister took 5 years ago to college, so we had four kids in college at the same time.
Oh, and now your mom and dad from the old country.
Yeah.
Where the Mayo and Tipperary?
Yeah. My mother is one of those, it's her Mercatee person. Which is why we were on the northwest side, frankly.
Yeah, of course. Everybody out there is from Tipperary.
Everybody is.
Yeah,
amazing. Castle Island, Kerry, and Tipperary.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, all of them.
Okay, yeah. And where was your dad from?
In the center of Tipperary.
And what year did they come over?
My dad came over in like 60. My mom came over in like 63.
No kidding.
Something like that.
So they met out here.
Yeah, yeah. Like the dances, like on the northwest side.
Of course,
The Jolly Club and the Golden Flame and those kind of, they used to have the dinner dances or whatever.
And are you the youngest, the oldest? Where are you in the family?
I'm the oldest son, which is, that's the biggie.
Yeah. And there's four of you?
Five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what are the rest of them? What are their names?
My sister Ann and my brother Danny. He's a lieutenant in the fire department.
Chicago
Fire Department. Yeah. My brother Mike, and he's in Ireland right now.
Doing what? Just hanging out?
Him and he married a girl from Ireland, and they're there for Christmas.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah. My sister Katie, she lives also in Park Ridge. There's four of us in Park Ridge.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's the big connection on the north, Tipperary.
That is.
Holy cow.
If you can, if a person from Tipperary marries a person from Castle Island, that's the ultimate Northwest Side combo. Okay. They had golden children.
Castle Island Engineers, I believe, is the name.
Yeah. My dad was an engineer, one of his jobs.
399?
And he got sworn in by a person from his part of Tipperary married a person from Castle Island, and that's how he got into the 399.
Of course, yeah. All right, great Irish history. So did you go to law school right after college?
I did. Yeah. I did. I went to Loyola after law school.
Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. I kept meaning to go away, far away from my mother, but it never seemed to work out.
Is your mom still alive?
Yeah.
Oh, is she? God bless her. What's her name?
Bridie.
Bridie? Of course it is. Yeah.
Bridget. She hates Bridie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Everyone calls her that.
Bridget Lynch. Yeah.
Bridget Lynch. She was Walsh.
Is she still in the neighborhood?
Yeah.
Oh, good for her. Okay, well,
My dad's been gone like 25 years.
I got to rest his soul.
He's a hard liver, Mike. You know?
You mean his liver or is a hard liver?
Well,
or a little of both. Well, you come from good stock. I can see that, Jimmy Lynch. All right, so in addition to being, you know, with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office for 25 years, you're also a pretty darn good writer. You started out as a playwright?
So, funny thing, yes, I did start out as a playwright, and never, definitely just a playwright. Like, I wanted to, my dad used to do amateur plays with something called the Council of Irish Arts, which used to do them at the Atlantic Theater.
Oh, sure.
In the 70s
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's on Grand Avenue.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I used to go to the auditions and stuff, and it never struck me to do that myself or anything.
Yeah.
And it was when he passed away in the late 90s,
yeah,
I wrote his eulogy, and there was something about that experience of writing it and having to deliver it that made me think that I wanted to write a play. That was just it. I just wanted to write a play. And so I wrote a couple of real, you know, real bad plays.
Well, I read The Tallest Man, and I thought that was a terrific play.
Yeah, that was a...
That takes place in Ireland.
It did. Yeah. That ran for like 4 months or
something.
Yeah.
Where? On the north side somewhere?
Yeah, at the Artistic Home, which at that time was at near Wrigley on Clark and Grace.
Okay.
Around that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that your first big play?
That was the first big play, yeah. First, like, equity stage thing.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
What year was that?
2009?
Okay.
10, something like that?
Yeah. Well, it's not that long ago.
No.
And then I read CSX.
CCX.
CCX was a terrific crime drama.
It was. I mean, I think so.
No, it was. It's absolutely one of the best plays I've read. And I've read a lot of plays, my friend.
Yeah.
Written a couple myself. Also, The Cheek.
The Cheek,
I saw at the Den Theater with Jimmy Ronan and Vera Kelly.
Yeah. Lord have mercy on her, yeah.
God rest her soul. Oh, wow, she was terrific, wasn't she?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I wrote the play for her, really.
Oh, of course, yeah.
She was an understudy in The Tallest Man, and she shouldn't have been the understudy. She didn't have as much, like, equity experience as the person that got cast, so they were afraid to cast her. And then the cast used to come and watch the understudy rehearsal on Sundays just to watch her.
Sure.
Because she was supposed to be this really hard mother.
Yeah.
And this other woman didn't understand what being a really hard Irish mother was about.
Yeah.
The way Vera knew what it was about.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did it in The Cheek, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Now, who was the gal in The Cheek?
Marcy. Was her name? Marcy Mencati.
Okay. Whatever. It was just the three of them.
Just the three of them. Yeah.
Terrific show. What year was that?
What was that, about 6 years ago, maybe?
Okay.
Something like that?
Yeah.
5 years ago?
And most recently, Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
An independent film. Mm-hmm. It premiered in October? What was that all about?
It premiered in Hollywood, actually, in end of August.
No kidding.
Yeah.
At a festival?
At the Dances with Films Festival.
Oh, that's pretty good.
It's a good one.
Sure. Yeah.
And I went out there.
Yeah, why not?
It was cool. That weird big Chinese theater. Still
Grauman's?
Called?
Grauman's.
Yeah, they changed sponsors.
Oh.
So I don't even know what it's called now. It's like, yes, it's that one with the weird lions, but it's got a different name now.
Well, they
like,
put the names in the cement and everything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But it's Lowe's.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Chinese theater, Oriental, or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't know. But
and that was just when, in October or August?
That was the world premiere in August.
No kidding.
Yeah.
But there's a picture. Didn't you guys do a... Was
then there was a world premiere at the Pickwick a month later.
Okay.
That was the Midwest premiere.
Okay. And that was not affiliated with any festival or anything?
No.
Oh, okay.
Pickwick is actually a place where they do a lot of world premieres.
Yeah.
It's independent theater.
Independent films,
Independent film.
Yeah.
And it's an independent theater. And, you know, it's a historic landmark, and it's got like 1,000 seats.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And it's beautiful in there.
Yeah.
So... And we had more than half filled.
Oh, great.
The governor called me and told me it was very irresponsible. But
the what?
The governor called and said it was very irresponsible to fill the theater in such
JB?
A way.
JB? Don't get me started on that fat piece of crap. Anyway. So what brought about that production of that film? This is your first film, right?
Yes, I had written...
CCX should have been a film. Yeah,
it does kind of lend itself to that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So the lead was really everyone in CCX was also only four characters.
Yeah.
So at least...
Well, you're smart. That's how you get them produced. Yeah.
Two or three of them were probably the leads. Definitely the kid who was the guy who was being questioned, the defendant,
yes,
or the accused. He was this unbelievable actor. And he had only been... I didn't know. We auditioned a lot of people for that role. Young-looking, slim, African-American guy. He'd only been acting less than a year.
This is the guy who went on to star in Ghost Rider.
Right. Yeah.
What's his name?
David Hamilton.
Okay.
And the reason why he hadn't been acting very long, I saw him at the audition. He was wearing these big, tall boots, you know, like sort of sandy-colored boots. And I was like, oh, that's a funny kind of a look. You know what I mean? And those were the boots he wore when he was in Iraq.
Oh, wow.
As a soldier.
Yeah,
and
he's
so,
a veteran.
Yeah, he's a veteran. And he had told people, he goes, you know, I always wanted to try acting. You know, if I don't get blown up in this truck,
yeah,
I am going to try to become an actor.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing. He was working nights, he was a supervisor for like UPS, and he was acting during the day.
Wow.
And this guy was just such a natural.
Yeah, he's very good.
So I took that idea that he told me that, and I just germinated in my mind for years. And so that main character in Ghost Rider, which he plays, is a guy who is in Iraq and has a much worse time than David, the person, has.
Yeah.
And he tells his friends, if I get back, I'm going to try to become a writer.
A writer. Yeah.
So I just flipped it on its head like that and made it. And then the character who's like his mentor, another writer, is based on an acting director that I know.
Okay.
A acting coach and a theater director that I know.
What's his name? Can you say?
He doesn't know that it's based on...
Oh, are you kidding me?
No.
Did he see the movie?
Yeah.
Wow. And he didn't pick up on it?
I know. I was talking to him at the premiere, and I was like, he's like, that guy's terrific. And I'm like, yeah.
That's you.
Well, then he'd have to want to know why David got to play his part himself, and he didn't get asked to play himself. You know?
Well, that when you're the writer, you can say, well, that's out of my hands.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, what about what's going to happen with that? Are they out pitching it? Or, I mean,
yes.
I'm sorry, I wasn't aware of it. I could have put it in my film festival, you know? I didn't know. Yeah.
I'm not that, Mike, I wish I was better at the business part of show business.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not that awesome at that. I hear Pat, your son Patty could probably take over as my manager.
Oh, he's great. He's
you know what I mean? That guy knows how to schlep it out there, from what I understand, you know?
Yes.
But the production of it was also...
What was the budget? Do you know?
Yeah.
Buck and a half?
It wasn't my money. That's the important thing.
Not, yeah.
But
yeah.
But it was... That was 46 everything with post and...
46 grand?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
That's really bone...
Isn't that?
Yeah, cut to the bone.
And like, so the guy who owned the Pickwick Theater is like, you can't really make a movie for under $400,000 like that for it to be any good.
Yeah.
We're like, okay.
Well, he's full of it, yeah.
And I go, I don't agree with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But is someone out there selling that film or what?
Tim Miller is the producer
and
the director.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's his first feature also. No, it's not. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But he actually, his first feature he was involved in, he starred in and co-directed it with somebody else, but he was starring in it. So, did an unbelievable job. And him and I worked, like, really closely on everything
that
had to do with it. So.
It's definitely a writer's film, you know?
It is.
It's very much a writer's film. But the interesting thing about all your stuff, and I've seen a lot of it, is... You start it, you say, oh, this is entertaining, and you get hooked into the characters, but there's always like at some point, the whole thing shifts on you. And that's when you go, whoa, I didn't see that coming. And that's what makes great drama, of course. And that's CC, there was a scene in CC, what's it, CC?
CCX, which is short for case closed exceptionally.
Okay. Yeah. Now, there's a woman who's being questioned.
Yeah.
And... You, all of a sudden, you realize
she's not who she
says
she is.
She's not who she's making out to be.
Right.
And it gets all of a sudden, it gets 20 times more interesting, you know? And the sex angle comes in and everything. It's like, holy cow.
The interesting thing, the lessons and all that, as you know, still you got to relearn it every project, Mike. Yeah. I feel like is when do we let the audience in on what we know to be true?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like if you let the exposition come out in just dribs and drabs, and really slowly, and let them be about two beats behind.
Yeah.
If they're feeling like they have to mentally catch up, that's the feeling I want them to have.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? The MacGuffin.
A MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. I'm assuming that a lot of this stuff came from, you had a long career as a prosecutor, and you met some real dirtbags, I'm sure, in the course of your life.
No question.
Criminals and, yeah. and sharks.
Characters, too.
Yeah, characters. And,
detectives alone, I mean.
Yeah. You know. And, and that's one of the reasons we do this show, because of the great stories the cops all have. So, and you've put that to great use as a writer, tapping into that.
I never felt more like I wanted to be a writer of drama than when I did my first year on Felony Review, which I'm sure you know.
Oh, about. I've heard all about Felony Review.
You know, I'm sure you have on the show. And like this.
No, not on the show, but I.
Oh, okay.
But that's the what they take the young state's attorneys and they throw them into this.
Yeah, and back in those days, like you really, the detective may be a guy or a girl that is not any longer interested in really questioning anybody. Like they may not be all that into it anymore. Yeah. They're burnt out.
But you have to, but they have to send you a guy.
But you got to be, you're
there.
Expected to be in on it.
Yeah.
And not just in on it, sometimes it's you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which some detectives would be embarrassed to hear that, but it for some, in other cases, it happens to be true.
Yeah.
You know, back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, the human drama that plays out is absolutely unbelievable.
I'll bet. I mean,
like it just turns your world upside down, you know.
And you've used that. That's
the, yes.
Yeah. 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 And what are you working on now?
I got a couple of things. It's either two features or a feature in a series because I can't decide whether this. I've already written a first draft of it as a feature. It's called The Black Dress, and it's set in the early '80s in Cook County criminal courts.
Yeah.
And the protagonist is a judge, and the antagonist is a different judge.
Yeah.
And one is on the take, and the other one is trying to get the other one to also be on the take.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. And I don't want to tell a truthful, I don't want to tell the Grey Lord story like a docudrama. But to use it as a backdrop, just the idea that if judges are on the take,
yes.
like to that level, whereas we know that there were murders thrown.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a judge let a guy go, Harry Alleman, go on a murder.
Yeah.
And one of the people involved in setting up that payoff for that murder was later a judge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so anything's possible.
Did you ever read Rick Kogan's book, Everybody Pays? I think that's the name of it, Everybody Pays.
So I've always wanted to write a movie like this, so yeah. I won't read any of them.
Oh, good, okay.
So right. I don't want anyone saying that I'm ripping off their characters.
Well, it has whatever. To do with... God, what was the name of that little gangster? What?
Bob Cooley. Bob Cooley, yeah. The attorney?
But no, it also dealt with Roger Toohey. You remember Roger Toohey?
The writer?
No, the gangster.
Oh, because I went to high school with a Roger Toohey.
Okay.
Best bowler in our high school.
The best bowler?
Best bowler.
Okay. Yeah. We're in the bowling team?
No.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, it's great stuff. It's Chicago stuff and... It's a great training ground. Now, how long? Much longer are you going to hang around the state's attorney's office, do you think?
You know.
He's got a buddy here from there.
Now, yeah. John Kerry over there, my office mate in financial crimes. You know, probably till the pension kicks in, 40
sure.
years or
okay.
so, you know.
You meet a lot of interesting characters, and especially financial crime, mm-hmm. asset forfeiture. And you're the guys prosecuting these moves,
yeah.
and some of them are pretty slippery, I can imagine.
So did a lot of, obviously, violent crime and stuff like that, and those kind of perpetrators are slightly different than the guys who perpetrate, like, real big enterprises of financial crime scams. They're a very particular sort of a breed of person. They're a certain specific kind of narcissist, you know what I mean? And they're they are... after 10 years, you come to recognize exactly who they are.
Yeah.
And some of them are hard to get to take a plea of guilty, no matter how good the case is, because they're not the type that will admit in front of anyone that they are wrong.
Right.
Yeah. So you end up having to try some cases where you have as much evidence as you can imagine you could have against somebody, and you end up having to try it because, this narcissist.
Do you enjoy that? Jury trials and all that?
Yeah. When you get out of it though, I'm too old for this. You start to feel like that a little bit.
Yeah.
You could have been a litigator, I feel.
Oh, probably. Yeah, sure. I barely finished high school. Now what do you? Oh, you just had a bout with cancer as well, right?
Yeah.
Now when did that hit you?
So one of the movies in post and stuff, I had a lump in my
throat.
This
is Ghost Rider.
Yeah. After we shot it, and then it would be 10 months ago just.
Oh, wow.
This end of January, I had like a mass or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just like an enlarged lymph node, but I thought that for, 16 months.
Oh, you did nothing about it? Yeah.
I complained about it.
Yeah.
Didn't that count? And so then I went to the doctor, and they got me to a CAT scan like the next day. And so, funny enough, yesterday, I went in for, they took a scope, like a camera, and they stuck it down my nose and down my throat.
Yeah.
And so they showed me side by side what it looks like now, and then they showed me what it looked like when I walked in.
Yeah.
And dude, it was a nightmare.
Wow.
It was insane. Like, it was this huge mass, and my throat was just cancer wall to wall.
No kidding. Spread. And you never smoked.
Never smoked. But spread both lymph nodes all the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did they do surgery?
No. When it's the protocol these days for this kind of throat cancer is if you get surgery, that means it's really, really good for you or it's really bad.
Yeah.
Like if it's my brother-in-law got diagnosed with the same cancer as me, like while I was going through treatment.
Oh wow.
And his was just a tonsillectomy, done.
Oh, that was it.
Nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, you son of a. That is horse. And so I had 7 weeks of chemo and radiation.
Wow.
And they radiate you to high heaven. I didn't talk for almost 2 months afterwards and stuff. Lost a lot of weight.
You did lose weight.
I did.
Yeah. But you look very healthy right now.
I started working out as soon as I popped. Before I could talk, I was working out again.
Yeah.
So the only way to get back is to go back.
Yeah.
Boom.
The only way to get back is to go back.
Yeah.
Did you hear our opening sing? The music comes in. So you got a clean bill of health now?
Yeah.
God bless you.
Yeah.
Now, how many kids you got?
Three.
You have three kids.
Yeah.
What does your wife do? Where'd you meet her?
I met her at Galvin's Pub on Lawrence on the northwest side. And at the time, I lived in a house with some other guys. I was like 31. Yeah. And I was still at the end of felony review. We were inviting girls to a party we were having the next night. And we were just inviting everybody. And she was with her cousin, who was my nephew's oncology nurse. He was I had a nephew who was like had childhood cancer. He was like 2 years old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you, I know you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then in passing, I'm like, the blind with her. I'm like, yeah, you can come too. So she showed up and,
How long have you been married?
Since 2004. So what's the...
You keep throwing these math
I
situations.
I know.
I went to Carmel.
17. Yeah, just had it, too. Okay. Just had the anniversary.
Oh, okay.
You think I'd know, right?
And
she doesn't listen to the
And
podcast.
How old are your kids?
I have a sophomore in high school, Seamus.
St. Pat's?
Maine South.
Yeah. Oh, because you live out in...
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have...
Seamus, that's a great name.
And I have Sean and Mary are twins in seventh grade.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
I have twins, yeah.
Really?
Billy and Patty. He's a twin. Patty's
I know
twin.
He had a brother. I didn't
yeah,
think
he
I realized
has a brother,
they were
Bill.
Twins.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's all I
My
have.
My mother's a twin. Too.
Is she? Oh, that's right. Yeah. Well, they must have been all pretty freaked out when you got cancer and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I pretended like it was fine. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think my son Sean was pretty flipped out.
And Seamus is the oldest?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got it all together. You think?
Well, I wish I was better at the business of
showbiz?
Of show business. I wish I knew how to, like, make it happen in that kind of a way. And I used, you know, I had a television show where I was partners with Harold Ramis some years back. And we wrote this TV show and stuff. And it just, you know, and I had the meetings
he
in LA.
He wrote it with you?
I wrote it, and he was, like, the partner in it. And so he was, like, I worked with him on the scripts and stuff.
Yeah, he had, he used to have script contests, and he was one of the judges. For
and it was not a comedy, though.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It wasn't not a comedy. You know what I mean? But it was, like, a crime caper show.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And
he died.
And then he died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although
showbiz.
His agents were going to be the ones running the show, really. Like,
yeah.
The machinery of getting the show done. And
he had a production company. I can't remember the name of it.
Him and this woman, Laurel Ward, was like they were like the company.
Yeah.
And his agents were not interested.
Oh, really?
Just straight up. This is his first foray into TV, and they were just not interested.
Wow.
And I just wanted to kill them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, you suck.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like,
were they from L.A.?
Yeah, it was all L.A. I had to go to L.A.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, holy cow, you people are all the things they say you are.
Yeah.
You know, right? Have you had these meetings, Will?
Oh, come on.
The
worst people in the world.
In the world.
That's why you start doing stuff yourself.
Yeah.
You just get sick of the jerks in Hollywood and Broadway, everywhere else. It's just, I met some of the most despicable people in the world in my career. Some of them I'm related to. No, just kidding, folks. Well, I think this is, what?
There's Pat
Johnson, one of our pals.
Got a haircut?
Yeah. did you order the pizza? Okay. We got Fox's Pizza on the way, Pat Johnson.
Pat, you know John Kerry over there in the back? Do you know John Kerry in the back, my old partner?
The show has just lost control of the show completely. You know? But that's okay, because we're having fun. What do you see? Now, you have this idea. You don't know whether it's a feature film or a series or what.
Yeah.
It's a crime thing, though, right?
The other one is the feature is definitely a crime one.
Okay.
And that is sort of based on, that's just going to be, CCX is going to be like a real-time situation where a CI, confidential informant, and things go super pear-shaped for him while he's undercover in a narcotics situation,
yeah.
Like he's working his way up or whatever. And that's going to be like hour and a half to 2 hours, and things go really bad for him and just following that. And that's actually based on an idea from the director, Tim, who did...
Tim Miller.
His dad was a U.S. attorney who had a CI inside of the outlaws, the bikers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And things
yeah.
went real bad for him at one time. This
yeah.
is in the 80s or whatever. It's a really interesting story. You know, and so just he liked that idea, and so there's a guy I write some of this stuff with, Greg Daly. He's a police lieutenant.
Okay.
For CPD, and
he's also a writer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He was my partner on the TV show with Harold Ramis originally.
Okay.
And so we're working on that right now. We'll see how
cool.
that goes.
Yeah.
It's you know, because that's something like once you get the idea, once you get the how that's going to play out, you could just really throw that down, I feel like. Just go with your instinct. You know what this is supposed to look like. You know what it's supposed to feel like. It shouldn't be that laborious.
Right,
you know?
Just write it.
They're
it
all
should write itself.
They're
yeah.
all laborious.
Yes,
you
yeah.
figure
yeah.
out, you know.
And how do you pitch something like that? I think you got to go, Harold Ramis is dead.
I know. Exactly. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I always think that if you keep writing it, this doesn't seem to work, but if you keep writing it as well as you can,
yeah.
and you write something better than somebody else, that maybe that will make a difference, you know?
Well, no, you got talent, man. You got to keep swinging the ball.
Just keep swinging, yeah. Yeah,
yeah
that's
no
true.
No question about it.
That's true.
In the meantime, you beat cancer,
I
you
did.
Know?
Yeah.
And you're down at the Daily Center every week?
Now I'm at the Daily Center again now. Yeah, for the first time since
you drive
started.
Down?
No way. No.
Yeah.
I take the blue line. It's
oh,
color.
Do you?
Yeah. It's yeah. There's a lot of local color.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see, but are you always observing all these characters?
I do love the train. You know what I love about the blue line too is when you leave like the tunnel at Logan Square and that part of like Bucktown, you head down towards downtown California, Damon, those stops. You can really see the backs of all the houses and restaurants and all the stairs.
Back porches and stuff.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's like a couple of porches at Damon that like abut like the right against the stop.
Yeah.
And I always think in a movie it would be so great to have a guy coming off the roof and jumping onto the stop. You know, wouldn't that be great? You know, jumping out of a window, you know, onto the train station, yeah. You know, the L platform, you know.
Father Dave. Father Dave, someone shouted out. Father I don't know. Damon. Oh, Father Damon. Well, this is fascinating stuff. Now, do you feel that your time is, you know, you gotta put in the 8 hours every day at work, and then you get go home and write, or
You know, now that I'm on the train, it's actually
that's a good spot. Yeah, that's
really
a good,
good
dreaming
really,
spot. And yeah. Everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who was whose idea was it to do your film in black and white?
That was
Tim.
Tim and the cinematographer. Cinematographer wanted to do it in black and white. He was a gentleman from Korea.
Oh, wow.
That now teaches at Georgia Tech.
Okay.
And I just think that he was about, you know how film sets are. There's always a problem. There's always an issue. There's always everything. And this guy was just as cool as could be, man.
Yeah.
Nothing like.
He rolled with the punches.
He rolled with everything, man.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Yeah.
I'm sure he wasn't getting paid a ton of money. Or
and well,
like
once when you guys hired him, he's the one who said, "All right, let's do this in black and white."
Yeah,
and
he thought the story was better in black and white, and Tim thought so. We were looking for originally a real washed out color, like The Verdict.
The
first Rocky.
Yeah, yeah.
That real washed out look with the long shots, sepia toned.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And Tim's like, well. You know, that's we're kind of looking for like not vibrant color anyway. So black and white, you know, I think you sort of forget that it's black and white after about 10 minutes.
Oh, you do. Absolutely.
Too, you know,
but it sets a tone. As
it
soon
sets
as you
a tone.
Oh my God! But it's ballsy. I think it's absolutely ballsy to do a black and white.
It's
film.
Probably not great for marketing, but what the hell anyway? Yeah. You know.
Now, Marianne Thebus, was that her last film?
I would assume that.
Boy, probably, she's terrific.
Is she something?
Yeah. When did she pass?
She's not passed.
Oh.
Yeah. But she has.
But she plays a woman who does. That's what you buy into it. She plays.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
She has. Can't really.
She's cut way back on her acting and stuff.
It's not. She would do it. Yeah. And I think she could do it. But she has a thing. She doesn't have dementia. She doesn't have Alzheimer's. But she's on certain kind of medication. For a real slow-growing cancer, that she cannot keep lines in her head.
Oh, yeah.
So she can't. She literally can't do theater anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
She's probably one of the top three theater actors I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah, she's terrific.
Scary.
Well, she just has this incredible, she's got it, whatever you want to call it.
I know.
And you go, wow, here's somebody I'm interested in hearing what they're up to.
There's something about her performance in this movie that when you see it, I don't know why everyone got choked up. Everyone gets choked up.
Of course, yeah.
You know, there's so much life in her.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think she was 88 or 89 when she were filming. So.
Yeah, God bless her. Yeah. Well, and she plays the protagonist, the mother, you know?
The mother.
Yeah. And the guy is good. Well, it's just a terrific movie. Now, if you had an offer to sell that to Netflix, or would you jump at that? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, I would. Do you know somebody? Do you know Ted Sarandos?
No, I don't. If I did, I wouldn't be sitting here at a Cork and Carry. But it's a great film.
Thank you.
And now do you have to go out and you're pitching these other stuff. Is your plan finish the script and then pitch it around and see if you can get anybody to buy it? Or what's the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like telling people, I know the bigger pitch in LA, the pitch is to just have like, you know, everyone's a writer in LA now.
Yeah,
everybody.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't have to be literate. You just have to have an idea, you know. But that's not how, that's not what I do. You know, I just want to be like, I'm not pitching you an idea. I'm handing you a script. Maybe you don't want to read it, but here it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And how did you pitch, what's it? Ghost Rider.
Tim came to me.
Ah.
And it was a play.
Oh, it was a play first?
It was already a play that had not been produced. It was only three drafts in.
Yeah.
Maybe two even. And he wanted to read some scripts I had because he had just come off a very successful short he had done, movie.
Yeah.
And I knew him, and we met at a coffee shop like in Skokie. Something like that. And
I didn't meet a lot of people in Hollywood from Skokie.
That's right. And He liked this script, and we spent about a year adapting it for a screenplay.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I want to encourage, just because you have that Irish background, and one of the things we do, you know, Hibernian Media, we have this 501c3. We're a small public charity, but we're dedicated to promoting and preserving Irish and Irish-American culture. You're right. That's right up your alley. Mm-hmm. You know that stuff. So I want to encourage you to write something Irish American, Chicago, whatever.
And I think that the story itself wasn't like just about Irish American whatever, but I thought that the Thomas character was a certain kind of Irish person.
Yeah.
For sure. That's always fascinated me. His character was the Irish bachelor that lives with his mother. And he embodied what that is.
And not in any fruity way or anything. No, he was just a loyal, good guy. And
just a guy that gets, you know, it's like staying in one place has its own momentum, kind of. You know what I mean?
That's great, yeah.
And that's what it is. And the Irish bachelors in Ireland are their own breed. I had an uncle like that.
Yeah.
And in the rural places, it's always fascinating because it seems so wacky lonely. It's so dark here, and it's so
You mean
old.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My Uncle Frank, I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. You know, what do you do all day? You know, when they're not out with the sheep anymore? You know, what the hell do you do all day? You know? They don't even turn on the lights. You know, they're just in there
Somebody, we had the Chicago Garda Pipes and Drum Band here for our fundraiser, and somebody was giving me grief and said, you know, you got guys in kilts and bagpipes. That's not Irish. That's Scottish. And what's? And I said, the reason they're wearing kilts is so the sheep don't hear the zipper. It's the old joke. Had to work that in. But I want you to write something. Give us some Irish American coppers and let's celebrate them. Even the bad ones. Yeah. You know, because if you look at these archetypes through history, the history of theater and films and stuff. Yeah. There aren't a lot of them, you know?
Well, I think they have been, there's been a lot of broad stereotypes of Chicago cops, of Irish cops. And I think that Hollywood likes to portray them in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I see it as always cardboard and two-dimensional. And just like every other ethnic group says that you're not portraying us in the right way, I don't think, I've not seen, a nuanced, Irish cop. You know, they want it to be a certain way, so they make it a certain way. They all got parent issues. They're all repressed. Blah blah blah.
Elkies.
They all drink too much.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you just be true to yourself, pal. Yeah. I think you're a great writer, and in the middle of asset forfeiture right now, are you hunting any big criminals, financial criminals, or
always around the holidays, a bunch of big money rolls in. I don't know why.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, and these days the money is in weed dealers are it, man.
Really? Yeah, I thought that was legal now.
Well, making it legal makes it more you know how rising tides raises all ships? The weed business is so huge now that the illegal weed business has never, ever been bigger.
Really?
So you'll stop a guy with, weed in his car and, $300,000 in cash.
In cash. Wow.
And a lot of it is, imported legal products that are, from California, Oregon, really high-quality stuff that they're selling here at, and it's really a black market deal, you know? But it's so crazy lucrative, you know? better than the powders.
Oh, really?
You know, I think so.
Just the weed.
Just the weed. Because it's a bigger market.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And they don't die off as quickly.
Yeah, exactly. They just get high. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, and you're the chief there. So do you decide we're going to go after this guy or that guy or, you know?
The police. Really.
Oh, the police bring him to you.
Yeah.
And those are usually narcotics detectives and stuff?
Yeah, but it's, we serve, every town, too, Every town has its own.
Oh, that's right. It's Cook County.
Cook County. It's not just Chicago.
Not just Chicago.
Yeah, we get every town and every task force, you know, even like DEA and stuff like that.
Terrific.
They don't want to go federal and stuff like that.
We've had a lot of cops from Cook County, the Megs.
We get stuff a lot from Meg. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, man.
A brilliant writer and a great guy and fun to be with. And you come back and tell us as things are progressing, okay? Jim Lynch, Merry Christmas to
you
and your family. God bless you all. We salute you, my friend.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Okay, we're going to take a little break on Hibernian Radio. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hey, everybody. This is Charlotte Houlihan. Don't touch that dial. My grandpa will be right back some more Hibernian Radio. He said something about seeing a man about a horse. Sounds like I'm actually going to get that pony after all.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party. With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
Chicago firefighters first formed an independent firemen's association in 1901. Firefighter delegates met in 1918 at the American Federation of Labor Convention to form the International Association of Firefighters. Chicago, having been the second organization to join the American Federation of Labor, they were designated as IAFF Local 2. Over the next 100 years or so, Local 2 has been tempered through turbulent times and survived to prosper. In 1980, a contentious strike almost split the union, but the Brotherhood of the Barrel prevailed. Today, it's a stronger union because of that, as Local 2 is forever negotiating benefits for their members. Ask any of the members and they will tell you, as the faces of our ranks change over time, the men and women of Local 2 will always stand steadfast in our resolve to aid and assist those who find themselves in dire situations. Our brotherhood is our bond, and we celebrate our differences as a way to better serve the citizens of Chicago and keep each other safe. For more info, go to IAFF2.org.
And we are back. What a great guy, huh? Jimmy Lynch. Keep your eye out for him. He's a great writer. You know, Billy, when I'm walking down Western Avenue, look in the window, Ken's, Wrong's, Hart's, Cork and Kerry, any of those great Irish saloons, and I see the ghost my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, Holy, who died?" Angela Roseanne Moran Walsh. Angela excelled at piano, tennis, and was from the beginning the smart sister. She graduated from Rosary College in 1961, married soon after, and started her family, a loving and revered mother. She managed three children, got degrees, an avid marathoner, three finishes in her 40s and 50s. She'd come home from work, lace up her running shoes, and run 10 miles along the lakefront every day. She did it, she said, so she could eat whatever she wanted because she was a foodie to the core. Graceful to the end, she will live on in the memories of her children, Monica, Eileen, and John. God rest her lovely soul, Angela Roseanne Moran Walsh. Pete Smith, Peter Joseph Smith, he was born March 3rd, 1931, to Peter Smith and Nora Smith. Two well-loved sisters, Mary Barrett and Eileen Smith, also survive his passing. Pete was a loving and caring husband of Patricia Farrell Smith. Together they raised six kids. He was the father of Timothy, Stephen, Lawrence, Maureen, Peter, and Julie. He was a champion swimmer for DePaul Academy and DePaul University. He worked many summers as a lifeguard for over 30 years prior to his retirement. He worked at Lemonette in Chicago. Over many decades, he served in various volunteer capacities for St. Tarsus' Church and School, as well as St. Patrick High School. And all who knew Pete were positively affected by his presence in their lives. He will be deeply missed. God rest his soul, Pete Smith. Michael Patrick Carr, 91, of Glen Ellen, after a brave battle with Parkinson's disease. He was born in Donegal, Ireland, to Colm and Ann Carr. He came to America in the 50s and had a fulfilling career in the transit industry as a supervisor with Pace, one of the largest bus services in North America. He married his wife Mary and became a dedicated father when their son Michael was born a few years later. Mike was also a passionate sports fan, enjoying baseball and other sports with his son. Mike leaves behind his devoted wife Mary, his beloved son Michael, and a number of nieces and nephews. God rest his lovely soul, Michael Patrick Carr. Peter Fleming, 77. Beloved husband of the late Janet and the devoted father of Peter, Sean, Michael, and Siobhan. Loving son of the late John and Katie Fleming, a native of Belina, County Mayo. God rest his soul, Pete Fleming. And finally, Vernon Breen, 96. What an obit this guy has. I won't be able to do it justice in the time we have, but he is survived by his loving children, daughter Maureen, and his son Tom Breen. He leaves behind his so dearly beloved brother Richard Babe Breen. He was preceded in death by his cherished wife, Helen, and two beloved children, his oldest daughter, Kathleen, and his firstborn son, Patrick. He grew up in Oak Park River Forest. He graduated from Fenwick. An amazing career. He was in the assigned to the 222nd Regiment, the 42nd Infantry, and deployed to Europe in 1944. He experienced 106 days of combat, and he was among the liberators of the Dachau concentration camp. This guy has an amazing story. God rest his lovely soul. Vernon Breen, 96. Okay, now, I'm going to close up the crypt, and God bless all of them. You know, we had our fundraiser Saturday, and what a blast we had, and I want to thank everybody for showing up. But I especially want to thank, I'm going to go through these names as quickly as I can, all the people who kicked in and donated. Maggie Murphy, Bill Gamboni, Bill Flood, John Griffin, Philip Coffey, Barbara Shars, Jim Sweeney, Local 150, Mick Durkin, Frank Sento, Larry Casey, Jim Crago, Dick Quigley, Skinny Sheehan, can you believe that? Jeff Lang, Pat Kana, William Donnelly, Matt Kana, Kevin B. Duffin, Richard Haggerty, whoa, what a great guy he is, Duke Alamo Lynch, Timmy O'Donnell, Dennis Kearns, Chief Mike Miller, Andy Ganane, Jim Crago, Punkin McMahon, Martin Duffy, Nick Rada, Mike Cowie, Ty Reardon, Kevin Forrest, Nadine Paul, Peter Nolan, Gino Cooney, Billy Guidey, Corkin Carey, Ryan's Fox's Pizza, Ryan Fox, Dave Powelski, Rosalie Swanson, Johnny Vegas Sheehan, Flood Brothers Disposal, Bob and Jim Sheehy, Ryan Fox, Emerald Society of Illinois, Yvonne Fitzgibbon, Billy Lean, Pete Brown, Declan McConnellog, Danny Shine, Brian Harms, Matt Stevens, Frankie Moran, Jimmy Cloonan, and Kevin Forrest. And if anybody else wants to kick in, go to the Indiegogo site because we're still raising money between now and the end of the year. What a great time we had, though, I got to tell you. We raised a lot of money and had a great time. And I want to remind everybody in January 11th, we're shooting a final episode of one of our Irish pub. One night only, the Mystic Rogue Irish Pub. Tuesday, January 11th, you'll be hearing more about it. But it's starring Katie Grennan and the Chancey Brothers live. And we're shooting at the Mystic Rogue at 7:30. All are invited. All are welcome. You're probably going to wind up being on TV that night. So annually, WTTW has been broadcast the show. So we'd love to have you join us. Tuesday, January 11th, one night only, Mystic Rogue Irish Pub for our Irish Pub, starring Katie Grennan and the Chancey Brothers. Be there. We take another break, and we're right back after these messages from our friends.
With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third-generation, family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRock, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.IE.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery. Or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner, whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza. It's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's Pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Okay, one joke before we get out of here. Hey, Merry Christmas, everybody. It's given to me by an old friend of mine. He said, one day I actually overturned my golf cart, and Elizabeth, a very attractive and keen golfer who lived in a villa next to the golf course, heard the noise, and she called out, "Are you okay? What's your name?" "It's John. I'm okay. Thanks," I replied. "John, forget your troubles. Come to my villa. Rest a while, and I'll help you get the cart up later." "That's mighty nice of you, but I don't think my wife would like it." "Oh, come on," Elizabeth insisted. She was very pretty, very sexy, and persuasive, and I was weak. "Well, okay," I finally agreed, "but my wife won't like it." After a few restorative brandies, I thanked my host. "You know, I feel a lot better now, but I know my wife's going to be really upset." "Don't be silly," Elizabeth said with a smile. "She won't know anything. By the way, where is she?" "She's still under the golf cart," I said. Okay, Merry Christmas, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Yeah.
The holly green, the ivy green, the prettiest picture you've ever seen is Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home. It's nice to know to kiss your beau while cuddling under the mistletoe. And Santa Claus, you know, of course, is one of the boys from home. The door is always open, the neighbors pay a call, and Father John, before he's gone, will bless the house and all. How grand it feels to click your heels and join in the fun of the jigs and reels. I'm handing you no blarney, the likes you've never known. It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
Christmas in Killarney is wonderful to see.
Listen to my story and I'll take you back with me. The holly green, the ivy green, the prettiest picture you've ever seen.
It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home. It's nice, you know, to kiss your beau while cuddling under the mistletoe.
And Santa Claus, you know, of course, is one of the boys from home.
The door is always open, the neighbors pay a call.
And Father John, before he's gone, will bless the house and all.
How grand it feels to click your heels and join in the fun of the jigs and reels.
I'm handing you no blarney, the likes you've never known.
It's Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.
The door is always open, the neighbors pay a call, and Father John, before he's gone, will bless the house and all.
How grand it feels to click your heels and join in the fun of the jigs and reels. I'm handing you no blarney, the likes you've never known. Is Christmas in Killarney with all of the folks at home.